This is Audible.
Nagash, the Undying King, by Josh Reynolds. Read by Emma Gregory. Chapter 1. Plague Fires. I still endure. The skies weep, the seas boil, the ground cracks, but I still endure. Let the stars gutter and the suns go cold, and still I will endure. The reverberations of my fall shattered mountains. My servants are in disarray, bereft of my guiding will. But I still endure. I am death, and death cannot die. It can only be delayed. The Epistle of Bone. The mountain air trembled with the squeal of splitting wood as the outer stockade succumbed to the greedy flames. The fire was not natural, for no natural flame burned the colour of pus. Natural fires left ash in their wake, not virulent, shrieking mould. It was a fire roused by sorcery, and only sorcery could snuff it. But there was no time, and in any event, there was no one among the Drac who possessed the strength to do so, not even their war leader. Tamra Vendrak, voivode of the Drac, oldest of the high clans of the Rictus clans, felt her soul wither as the great hall where she'd been born collapsed with a groan. Lodge poles burned like torches, and the skulls of three generations screamed useless warnings to their living kin from their rooftop perches. The fire spread like a thing alive, leaping from peaked log to thatched roof without pause.
"Back! Get back!"
she cried, shoving her clansfolk along, away from the creeping flames, and towards an ornately carved stone archway.
"To the inner keep! Go!"
A stream of frightened faces surrounded her, pushing and shoving to escape the oily haze which preceded the plague fires. The walls of the inner keep were high and sloped backwards, surrounding the lodge houses of the Highborn, as well as the great storehouses which fed her folk in the darkest months of winter, and the icy wells which drew fresh water up from beneath the earth. The walls had been built in centuries past by greater artisans than her people now possessed. What few living warriors that remained to her clan were stationed there, loosing arrow after arrow at the invaders. Once the last of her folk were safely through, they would retreat down through the lich gates hidden beneath the lodge houses and within the great wells, then along the secret paths that led into the surrounding wilderness. Those ancient paths had been carved for this very contingency after the black days of the Great Awakening, and they would be the salvation of her people, if she could buy them the necessary time. Tamra held her ground, letting her clansfolk break and flow around her. The enemy would be inside the outer palisade in moments, and she intended to greet them with all due hospitality. She was a daughter of the Drac, and could do no less. She caught the edge of her chestplate and shifted it. The armour was old and ill-fitting, digging into her flesh at inconvenient points. An heirloom from the age of myth, it had belonged to her father, and had been handed down from one voivode of the Drac to the next for generations. A stylized serpent, once a vivid red but now a faded brown, marked its faceted surface. It was the symbol of a fallen kingdom and of lost glories.
Sister.
She glanced at her brother. His empty eye sockets burned with witchfire flames, and his fleshless fingers clutched the hilt of his barrow blade tightly.
You should go. They will be here soon.
His words echoed in her head like a freezing iron wind.
Your responsibility is to the living. Leave this to the dead.
No, Sapa. We will meet them together.
She recalled the day he'd died to an auroch blade, and the ceremony that followed. She'd left his body on a high slope to be picked clean by scavenger birds and flesh-eaters. She had carved the sigils of rousing into his bones herself, as he would have done for her. As they'd both done for the dead who now surrounded them in a phalanx. The old dead, the loved dead, sons and daughters, fathers and mothers, the countless generations of the Drac, stirred to fight anew for hearth and home. Death was not the end for the Drac. They lived and died and lived again, to serve their people and their god, and they had done so since the coming of the Undying King and the Great Awakening. And now the dead were all her people had left in these final hours. They outnumbered the living 2-1, with barely several hundred of her people left to flee. Most of their living warriors and the hetman who'd led them had fallen, slaughtered in open battle by an enemy far stronger than them. But the dead held firm, and so would she. She could feel them fighting on the walls and in the streets. The majority of the dead were scattered throughout the outer keep and along the palisades, fighting to delay the inevitable. One by one, their soul fires were snuffed out as the enemy pressed ever forwards.
"We hold them here until the outer village is empty," she said. "Then we retreat no faster than we must. Let them blunt themselves on our shields. We are Drac. What we have, we hold."
"We hold," the dead echoed. The skeletons were armoured in bronze and carried weapons and shields of the same. Steel was precious and carried only by the living. They needed it more than the dead. She could feel the flicker of soul fire animating each of the fleshless warriors, the brief embers of who they had once been. Such was the gift of the highborn of all the Rictus clans. Only those who could stir the dead could lead the living. Overhead, black clouds grumbled with the promise of a storm. The skies of the north were never silent, never peaceful. The snow had ceased for the moment, but soon it would be replaced by rain. Purple lightning flashed in the belly of the clouds, and she watched it for a moment. Then the pox flames parted, and the enemy arrived in a rush. The first to come were the hounds, their fur soggy with pus and their eyes faceted like those of flies. They bayed and loped forwards in a seething mass of rotted fangs and blistered paws. Bronze-tipped spears slid home, turning their howls to shrieks. Those beasts that made it through the thicket of spears died to swords and axes. As the hounds perished, their masters arrived, lumbering through the plague fires. The Blight Kings were monsters, clad in filthy tabards over grimy warplate, marked with the sign of the fly. They advanced with a droning roar, hefting outsized weapons in flabby hands. They struck the bronze shield wall like a fetid fist, and the line bowed inwards.
"Sapa,"
Tamara said, fighting to keep her voice calm. Her brother stepped smoothly towards the enemy. His barrow blade sang a deadly song as it rose and fell, removing limbs and heads. The Blight King's momentum was broken in moments. They fell back, their droning song giving way to cries of alarm. They retreated, seeking shelter in the plague fires. But she could hear the distorted jangle of pox bells and the thump of skin drums, and she knew more were coming. These had only been the most eager, the least disciplined. She looked around the palisade yard, watching as the last houses of her people were consumed, along with the bodies of the dead. Where the plague fires burned, Her magic was as nothing, and the dead were lost.
They are coming,
Sapa said. Fall back to the archway. Tighten the line. She had learned the art of the shield wall from her father, and from his mother before him. Their spirits had whispered to her in her infancy, and shown her much, the proper way to wage war, to raise walls, to lead. The dead had taught her the lessons of 1,000 years, but they had not prepared her for this. The lands claimed in millennia past by the Rictus clans were far beyond even the northernmost cities and principalities of Shaish. They were harsh lands, clinging to the frozen coasts of the Shivering Sea. No enemy had ever come so far north in all the centuries since the coming of Chaos. Or at least, none had survived the attempt. Those the cold did not claim inevitably fell to the shambling packs of dead walkers who hunted the thick forests and ice floes in ever-growing numbers. But these creatures, these rot-bringers, were different. They easily endured conditions which had defeated even the most frenzied of the blood god's worshippers. And now they were at her walls, battering down her gates. The remains of her strongest warriors hung from their fly-blown banners, and the villages of her people were smoke on the wind. This siege was the culmination of an assault of her territories, which had lasted days. The rot-bringers were marching north, and they seemed disinclined to leave anything larger than a barrow marker standing in their wake. Her people had been driven steadily northwards from steadings and camps until they'd had nowhere else to run. She hadn't had enough warriors, living or dead, to do more than delay the foe. And now not even that. How had it come to this? Was Nagash dead, as the southerners claimed? Had the Undying King truly fallen in battle? How could one who was as death itself die? Her mind shied away from the thought, unable to accept such a thing. Nagash simply was. As inescapable as the snows in winter, as ever-present as the cold, he had always been and always would be. To consider anything else was the height of folly. Chortles of barbaric glee filled the night as scabrous shapes climbed the palisades. She looked up. These ones were men, rather than monsters, but only just. Clad in filthy smocks and rattletrap armour, they carried bows. Some of them might even have been Rictus once, before they'd traded their souls for their lives. She'd heard from refugees that several of the lowland tribes had joined the foe, though whether freely or under duress, no one had known. It didn't matter. Whoever they had been, they were the enemy now.
Shields, Sapa said.
Bronze shields were raised with a clatter, covering Tamra, even as the dead continued to retreat. She heard the rattle of arrows and saw one sink into a skull. A yellowish ichor had been smeared on the arrowhead, and it ate through the bone in moments. The skeleton collapsed, dissolving into a morass of white and yellow. Tamra hissed in revulsion and flung out her hand. Amethyst energies coalesced about her fingers before erupting outwards in an arcane bolt. The palisade exploded, and broken bodies were flung into the air. As the echo of the explosion faded, the Blight Kings gave a roar and thudded forwards, supported by more of their mortal followers. The dead reached the archway a moment later.
"Brace and hold," Tamra said, as Sapa pushed her back into the archway.
It was the only route into the inner keep, short of knocking down the walls themselves, and these were not mere palisades of hardened wood. They were hard stone, packed by dead hands in better days. Sorcerous fire might eat away at them, but it would take time. Her people would be gone by then, scattered into the crags and hollows. There were hidden shelters in the high places and secret roads in the low. Some of them would escape. Some would survive and find safety among the other clans. Axes crashed against shields for what felt like hours. The dead held firm. Sapa stood beside her, waiting with eerie patience for what was surely to come. Tamara looked up at the archway, which rose high and wide around them. 100 generations of Drac artisans had added to it, chiseling away cold stone to reveal scenes of life and history, great battles and small moments, the story of her people. She placed a hand against it. "I will miss it," she said.
"We hold," Sapa said.
"Yes," she said, "hold." That was what Drac did best. Come raiding orcs, marauding ogors, or vengeful Duardin, the Drac held. Their bronze shield walls had never been broken before today, and she was determined that they would not break again. Not while she drew breath.
"Hold, brothers and sisters! Set your feet and lift your shields! We are Drac!"
"We are Drac,"
came the ghostly reply. The dead held as they always did. She reinforced their will with her own, adding her strength to theirs. Bronze swords slid between locked shields, seeking swollen flesh. Bodies piled up before them, creating a second wall, this one of flesh. She considered drawing them back to their feet, but her strength was flagging. Best to save her power for holding this last phalanx together. All around her, great maggoty axes hewed apart bone and bronze. Skulls fell to the snowy ground and were crushed beneath the tread of the enemy. The dead retreated, their line contracting. They left a trail of carnage behind them, but the enemy continued to press the assault. Tamara's breath rasped in her lungs as she spat darkling oaths. Amethyst fires seared pox-ridden flesh clean as chattering spirits ripped warriors from the ground and sent them crashing into the stones. But it was not enough. Soon the spirits faded and the purple flames dimmed, leaving only the oily green of the plague fires. The archway cracked and crumbled as the dead were pushed back. The courtyard of the inner keep was empty for all save those who had died on the walls. With a thought, she jerked them to their feet, though it repulsed her to do so. It was not right to animate the dead thus, not when flesh still clung to their bones, but necessity drove her. The dead walkers lurched towards the foe, tangling them up, buying her a few more moments.
"You must flee now, sister,"
Sapa pulsed, his voice piercing the veil of pain that was beginning to cloud her thoughts. Her skull ached, and her heart stuttered in its cage of bone. She had never attempted so much magic in so short a span. All around her, the last lodge houses of the Drac were burning. Stores of food, hoarded against the winter, were consumed by the flames. The ancient wells which had served her folk since time out of mind now vomited up a virulent steam as the waters within turned foul and black. She backed away, clutching her head. The back of her legs struck something. She turned. An immense wooden effigy, carved in the likeness of the Rattlebone Prince, stared down at her with empty eyes. As a child, she had prayed to Nagash, begging him for the strength to aid her people in battle. When she had made the bones dance for the first time, she'd thought that he had answered her, that he'd blessed her. But where was he now? Where was the Undying King when his people needed him?
"Tamara," her brother said, "go."
Thunder rumbled overhead as if in agreement.
"No, I will not leave you."
She flung out a hand, trying to summon the strength for another spell.
"I will."
She trailed off as a hush fell. The pox worshippers had broken off their attack as they spilled into the courtyard, holding back, as if in readiness for something.
"What are they doing?"
"Waiting," Sapa said.
Tamara did not ask for what. She did not have to. She could feel what was coming easily enough. The flats of rusty axes thudded wetly against pustule-marked shields, and the droning song of the pox worshippers rose in tempo. Their ranks split like a wound, disgorging a rotund shape clad in foul robes. The newcomer waddled towards the dead, a leering grin stretched across his pallid features. Toadstools sprouted in his wake, pushing through the yellowing snow, and a cloud of flies swirled about his head like a halo. Tamra could taste the fell magic seeping from him. A sorcerer, the same who had set the palisades alight and burnt the forests black.
"Well, well, 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 what have we here?"
His voice was like mud striking the bottom of a bucket, and he flashed rotten teeth in a genial smile.
"Dead men walking!"
He sniffed and looked around.
"This is the place for it, I suppose."
He gestured, and a pox worshipper limped forwards, cradling a grotesque banner in the crook of one bandaged arm. The creature set the banner upright. Plague bells dangled from a demonic visage, wrought in iron. A pale liquid sweated from the face and pattered to the ground, causing virulent wisps of smoke to rise from the churned snow.
"I, Tulg, claim this place in the name of the most suppurating and blightsome order of the fly," the sorcerer said.
He gesticulated grandly.
"Be joyful, for life returns to these dead realms."
"This place is not yours to claim,"
Tamra said loudly. Loose snow whipped about as the storm grew in intensity overhead. Thunder rumbled. The crackle of the plague fires was omnipresent. Somewhere, a hunting horn blew. She tried to shut out the noise, to focus on the enemy before her. If she could kill him, the foe might flee. Her people might yet be saved, or, at the very least, avenged.
"Is it not? We seem to be doing a fine job, regardless."
The sorcerer looked around.
"I see no defenders of merit, only old bones and a scrawny woman. If that is the best you savages can muster her, our crusade will be easier than Blightmaster Wolgus claimed."
"Kill him,"
Tamra said. The dead surged forwards. Their fleshless frames lent vigour by her will and fury. The sorcerer laughed and swept out his hands. Plague fire consumed the remaining skeletons, one after the other. She staggered as their soul fire ebbed and her spells were torn asunder. The ache in her head grew worse, and she clutched at her scalp.
"Back, sister."
Sapa shoved her aside as a claw of green flame swept down, and he thrust up his shield to meet it. For a moment, he held it at bay, but the flames writhed around the edges of the shield, and the bronze began to corrode. It blackened and sloughed away, and the flames poured down, engulfing her brother. He sank to one knee, his spirit groaning in her head.
"Tamra, sister, run!"
Lightning flashed, searing the night. She heard the sorcerer utter a startled oath, and she screamed as her brother's soul was snatched away from her flagging grip. Smoke billowed, filling the courtyard. Coughing, she sank back against the statue of Nagash.
"I beg you, help me,"
she said, staring up at the effigy.
"Heed me, undying king. Heed your servant in this, her hour of need. Help your people."
Her voice cracked, and she slumped against the statue. Tears froze on her cheeks.
"Help us!"
She saw the blackened hilt of Sapa's barrow blade and snatched it up. As she lifted it in both hands, it crackled with the fading sting of lightning and burnt in her palms.
"I do not know what sort of sorcery that was, but lightning or no, I will avail you nothing,"
the sorcerer said, as he waved the smoke aside.
I think I will chain you to my master's palanquin, corpse-eater, or what's left of you. You do not need your arms or legs to stump along, awkward though it may be.
He coughed.
And your scalp will look fine, hanging from the banners of the Order of the Fly.
He clapped his pudgy hands together gleefully.
So, arms, legs, and hair, in that order, I think.
Come and take them, if you can, Tamra said, forcing herself upright. Grief sat like a lead weight in her chest, along with not a little fear. Her brother was gone. But she was a daughter of the Drac, and death was to be embraced. She extended Sarpa's blade. She heard the winding of a hunting horn again, closer this time. The sorcerer chortled and advanced, green fire dripping from his crooked fingers.
Maybe I'll burn your tongue out as well. You seem like the type to curse overmuch.
The pox flames flared bright and began to swell around him. As they did so, a shadow fell over him, and he glanced up, eyes widening.
What?
A flash of red and black descended. The ground shook. The flames were snuffed, and the sorcerer vanished, his body abruptly pulped beneath the curving talons of the monstrosity which now crouched between Tamra and her foes. A long, whip-like tail of vertebral segments lashed with feline agitation as fleshless jaws sagged, exhaling a cloud of masticated spirits. The wailing spirits swirled about the beast, bound to its creaking bones by some fell sorcery. The Blight Kings drew back from the dread abyssal as it poured at the snow, fastidiously scraping what was left of the sorcerer from its claws. Its rider leaned forwards in her saddle, a mocking expression on her youthful face. She was beautiful, Tamra thought, though it was a deadly kind of beauty, like that of a fine blade. She wore black armour, studded with bones, and a tall headdress in the fashion of the ancient kingdoms of the Great Dust Sea. Her exposed arms were the colour of marble, and her lips were blood red. Her eyes shone like those of a great mountain cat caught in the torchlight.
Did we interrupt? My apologies. Nagadron grew impatient.
The rider's pale hand stroked the black iron bones of the dread abyssal's neck. At her touch, the monster stiffened and uttered a piercing shriek.
I am Neferata, the Queen of Blood and Mistress of the Barrow Dwell.
And you? Well, it doesn't really matter, does it? Her thin lips stretched in a feral smile as she drew a long curved blade from her sheath on her saddle. After all, you'll be dead soon. The dread abyssal surged forwards, limbs clicking like the workings of some great mechanism. Neferata leaned low, and at her gesture, the bound spirits boiled forwards. They rolled over the Blight Kings and their mortal followers like a malignant bank of fog. Spectral claws and blades separated heads from shoulders and spilled intestines into the snow. The Blight Kings tried in vain to strike back at their unearthly foes, but their blows chopped harmlessly through the smoky forms. Nagadron slammed full tilt into the distracted Blight Kings, and Neferata's sword flickered out, capitalizing on the damage done by her spectral warriors. She gave a shriek of laughter as the dread abyssal bore a bloated warrior down and bit off his head. An arcane bolt sizzled from her palm and zigzagged through the ranks of Pox worshippers, reducing them to smoking husks. As the slaughter progressed, Tamra heard the hunting horn once more, louder than ever, and felt the ground tremble beneath her feet. The Blight Kings broke as Neferata savaged a path through their ranks, and they began to spill back towards the archway, seeking safety. But there was none to be had. A column of armoured riders astride coal-black horses speared through the archway and into the disorganised rabble. The newcomers wore black armour, and their pale, feminine faces glared out from within baroque helms as they lashed out at the foe. They pierced the enemy ranks like a blade, and the column split in two, encircling the Pox worshippers. The carnage which followed was brief and cruel. When the last of the Blight Kings lay dissolving in his own juices, Neferata turned her monstrous steed back towards Tamra. As she passed by it, she uprooted the plague banner and tossed it aside. "You are welcome," she said, looking down at Tamra.
"Thank you, great lady," Tamra stuttered.
She had heard stories of the being known among the Rictus clans as the Great Lady of Sorrows, but seeing her in the flesh was something else entirely. The vampire radiated a terrible strength, as if her lithe shape were but a mask, hiding something infinitely more monstrous within. Eyes like agates bored into her own, and she felt as if her mind and soul were being peeled back bit by bit. "You are of the Drac," Neferata said. She gestured to her face. "You have that look, something about the jaw." Tamra sank down to one knee, leaning against her brother's sword.
"Yes, O Queen of Blood. I am Tamra Vendrak, voivode of these lands."
She looked up.
"Or I was."
"Yes. You look a bit like dearest Isa. The eyes, I think."
Tamra hesitated. Queen Isa Vendrak had been dead for centuries, and her bones long since dust scattered on the wind. Neferata turned away as one of the black riders trotted towards her.
"The rest of our blightsome friends?" she asked.
"Scattered, my lady," the vampire said, as she removed her helmet.
"Or impaled, for those who follow to find."
She had been beautiful once, and still was, if you ignored the hunger in her eyes and the stains of old gore streaking her ornately crafted warplate.
"Ah, Adema, your little jokes will be the death of you, I fear."
"But not today, mistress."
"No, not today.
Today the Sisterhood of Xandor has won a great victory," Neferata said. She looked back at Tamra.
"Where are your people?
Some survived, I assume."
"Fled into the crags and hollows," Tamra said.
She rose at Neferata's gesture.
"Where it is safe, my lady."
Adema snorted.
"There is no safety, not here or anywhere else."
"No, but perhaps we might make such a place." Neferata raised Tamra's chin with the tip of her sword. "Call your people back.
They must go north, to the shores of the Rictus Sea, to the great redoubt there. You know it?"
Yes. Is this the word of Nagash? Has he returned? Is he to lead us in battle once more?"
Tamra couldn't stop the questions from spilling out.
"Nagash?"
Neferata said, looking down at her. She leaned over and spat in the direction of the effigy.
"That is for Nagash, and good riddance to him."
Tamra watched the gobbet of crimson spittle slide down the statue's cheek.
"Where is he?" she asked softly.
"Not here, sister," Neferata said. "I fear we have only ourselves to look to in the dark days to come."
She gave a mocking smile.
"And what a relief it is."
Chapter 2. The Undying King.
The corpse geometries are awry. Their night-black formulae is rendered powerless by the madness of ruinous gods. Order has been cast down, and chaos reigns. My kingdom shudders beneath a terrible lunacy, unfettered and ever-changing. But I still endure. I will ever endure. The Epistle of Bone.
On a basalt throne, far below the reach of any light, a vast figure stirred. A great hand, shrouded in a battle-marked gauntlet, reached up to touch a fleshless cheek, as if to brush away some irritant. Immense bones, blackened by fire and scarred by blades, creaked in their housings as a massive head tilted upwards. Light flared deep within abyssal sockets as consciousness returned. The Undying King awoke. Something had disturbed his slumber. A voice calling his name somewhere out in the dark. No, not one. Many. A thousand. A million. A storm of voices crying out for him who had made himself a god. Crying out for the Rattlebone Prince, the great necromancer. Crying out for Nagash. And Nagash could not answer, for he lacked the strength. A hollow laugh slipped from between tombstone teeth. This, then, was the true price for wresting divinity from the claws of fate. To hear, to see, and be unable to act. His mind shied away from the deluge of prayers, focusing instead on the one which had caused him to stir. He cast his gaze about his empty throne room. Great pillars, made from the bones of entire generations, stretched upwards into the silent dark. Mosaics of onyx and amethyst lined the floors and walls, depicting his victories over the old gods of the underworld during the Age of Myth. So many victories, and one singular, inescapable defeat. Now spiders crept across his frame, spinning their webs between his ribs and over his eyes. Worms squirmed in the hollows of his bones. He snuffed out their lives with barely a thought and drew their deaths into him. It was not enough. Unfulfilled, he reached out and caught up one of the ghosts which clustered about his throne. The spirit struggled in his grip and came apart like a morning mist, flowing into the nooks and crannies of his form, as Nagash devoured its soul fire. Somewhat reinvigorated, his attentions turned outwards, following the voice which had awakened him. 9 heavy tomes, each the size of a man, and containing the accumulated wisdom of eons, rose up around him, their heavy chains rattling loudly. The flabby pages of the books flapped with a sound like thunder, as the Undying King hurled his fell spirit upwards through the tangled caverns of Stygix and the shadow-haunted palaces of the Amethyst Princes. Mile by mile, his consciousness crawled upwards, pulling itself along like a choking fog through the minds and husks of the dead which inhabited the underworld. In hidden redoubts and outposts, dead walkers stiffened as Nagash's awareness suddenly occupied their rotting frames, if only for an instant. His consciousness rode a flock of bats out of the lightless caverns, swirling up into the bloody skies. And then he was striding the night wind, bodiless and unseen. He crossed the brackish waters of the Sour Sea in the blink of an eye, and he raced above the great indigo velts of Angkor Wat in the fleshless skull of a dire wolf. But no matter how far he travelled or in what direction, the scenery was always the same. War, unending and all-consuming. The armies of the Ever-Chosen marched on the Mansies of the dead, and there was little Nagash could do save watch through the eyes of his servants and remember. He walked the fire-shrouded streets of Sepulchre as a shadow, and he saw the great tapestries of ghost silk burn in flames of azure and cerise. In Morsend, he watched through the poached eyes of a cooling corpse as a coven of soul-blight vampires defended the living against the ferocity of the blood god's worshippers and were consumed by their own bloodlust. Wrathful now, he roared silent curses as Kripslav stirred from its enforced slumber in the silent tombs of Eri and shrugged off its chains. The zombie dragon, first and greatest of its kind, slid into the sky with a single beat of its ragged wings. It was not alone in its escape from Nagash's bindings. The black shape of the Cyanok spinebat, huge and loathsome, emerged from the craters of the Wraith Moons, free to hunt the starfields anew. And everywhere, the gateways to long-sealed underworlds cracked wide and wept malignant spirits. All that he'd built was beginning to crumble. The delicate precision of the corpse geometries had unravelled, and order overturned by chaos. Souls were spewed free and unbound into the skies, loosed from the battlefields that had become monstrous abscesses of necromantic energy. The untended dead roamed in vast, ever-increasing hordes, endangering all who crossed their path. Those he had once counted as servants sought to carve out fiefdoms of their own from the carcass of his once realm-spanning empire. And all because of Sigma! Nagash turned. Burning towers stretched up towards the sky, casting a hazy radiance over the waters of the Bitter Sea. With but a thought, he was there, standing amidst the smoke and carnage, watching through the hundredfold eyes of the newly slain. He knew this city, Hellstone. Its rulers had bended the knee to him, though they did not worship him. A proud people, mighty in war and cunning in trade, but not any more. Now they were burning and dying, as the Lords of Chaos ran rampant through the 99 circles. Nagash felt a flicker of satisfaction. Perhaps if they had prayed to him instead, it might not have come to this.
Sigma!
The voice cried again. A prayer, perhaps, or a curse. Curious, the Undying King followed it, striding from body to body. Atop a crumbling tower, he found the speaker, and more besides. The one who cried out was a prince of the city, clad in iron and silks, fighting to hold a terraced tower. But there was another with him, Manfred von Karstein, last prince of a forgotten kingdom. As ever, he glowed with spite and stank of ambition. How many times had he chastised the Mortark of Shadow for some scheme or other? He'd lost count. There was a certain joy to be had in conjuring new punishments for so deserving a creature, though he could not recall what the first had been, or the reason behind it. It did not matter. If Manfred survived, there would be more betrayals and more punishments. It was his nature. As sure as death itself, Manfred would always seek his own advantage. Such relentless drive was almost admirable in its way. Nagash watched as the vampire hacked down one roaring blood warrior after the next, fighting alongside his mortal ally with frantic courage. The tower creaked on its foundations, and the ancient stones burst as demons and mortals alike scrambled up its sides. The Mortark fought back to back with the Hellstone Prince as red-skinned bloodletters loped towards them. Nagash turned away from the desperate conflict, his attention caught by another voice. A familiar one this time, not raised in prayer, but in invocation. He left Manfred to his fate and followed the voice across the vast mountains of the north into the shattered ruins of the six kingdoms of Rictus, to the shores of the Shivering Sea. He remembered these lands, if only dimly. He had waged a war here, one of many. Those who should have been thankful for their status had instead used it to strike at him. 6 kings of old, steeped in the arts he had dredged up from the deep wells of the underworld, had set themselves in opposition to fate. For 6 days and 6 nights, Nagash had fought and utterly destroyed the armies arrayed against him. And on the 6th day, he had taken the lives and souls of the kings, reducing them to blighted husks. He had interred what remained of them in the crags overlooking the Shivering Sea, sealing their damned souls away within the rock until such time as he judged them suitably chastened. But the bindings he had looped about them had begun to grow weaker with every passing year since his defeat. Even now, he could sense the broken kings rattling the bars of their cages and crying out for release. As he passed over the great ice-rimmed forests and snow-capped crags, the sky was riven by fire and storm. Lightning flashed, bringing with it the stink of the heavens. Was Sigmar watching, sealed away in his pitiful realm? Nagash hoped so. It was his dearest wish that the barbarian should be made to endure every torment inflicted upon Shaiish, thanks to his treachery. When he had become whole once more, Nagash would storm the gates of Azir and drag the barbarian from his throne. He would cast him down. Aye, and Archaon with him. All creation would bow before Nagash. All would be one in Nagash. All would be well, because Nagash so commanded, and to defy Nagash was to defy death itself. And no living man or god could defy death. Not for long. Far below, refugees struggled through waist-high snows, forging a path through the dark heart of the forests. The Rictus lands had once been heavily populated, despite the harsh conditions. Now, plague and war had decimated the once proud clans, reducing them to scattered bands, fleeing ever northwards towards the sea. He felt no sympathy for their plight. Had not their ancestors betrayed him? Had they not defied him? And yet they were his to punish or raise up as it pleased him. They were his, like all those who dwelled in the mortal realms were, sooner or later. He would not countenance either their destruction or salvation in any name but his own. Following close on their heels came the invaders, a motley column of despoilers stretching for countless miles across fjords and flows through forest and fen. No single army this, but several, joined beneath a solitary fly-blown banner. It resembled nothing so much as a wave of gangrene creeping across a shattered limb. Rotbringers, the servants of the plague god, usurpers of life and death both. In their wake, the natural order was undone. The snows melted, the barren scrub flourished with hateful life, and the icy rivers became turgid with filth. Where they passed, the forest began to warp. The trees sprouted unnatural growths or else sickened and died before crumbling to stinking mulch. Stones split to reveal slobbering mouths which panted hymns to the Lord of Decay, and the beasts of the crags shed their fur for coats of mould and scaly scabs. A howl went up from the flanks of the monstrous column. The cyclopean plague-bearers and beasts of Nurgle, who trudged alongside the mortal warriors, had caught a glimpse of his spirit as it observed them. They could not truly see him, for he was far beyond the limits of their perception, but like all animals, they knew when a predator was near, and they brayed their fear to the skies. The mortal Rotbringers would not understand. Not yet. But he would teach them. He pressed on, hurtling through skull and skin, dragging himself along a chain of carrion birds and the bodies they fed on. As he neared the Shivering Sea, the voice which had called to him became clearer. familiar.
Master, I bid thee to appear. Your servant would speak with thee.
The frozen sea was full of the dead and the things which feasted on them. A million bodies hung unmoving in a web of shattered ice-cutter galleys and trading vessels, which stretched beneath the surface for miles in every direction. They had all perished at once and suddenly. This had been the price of defiance. To defy death was to welcome it, to beg for it.
Master, I feel you near. I humbly beg an audience with thee.
The voice was insistent, yet respectful, measured. Nagash rose upwards, climbing a ladder of the sunken dead, passing like a cloud of silt through thickets of broken spars and shattered masts. The thoughts of the broken kings scratched like mice at the underside of his awareness as he breached the surface. Entreaties, implorations, and demands swirled up through the boreholes of his mind. Even after so long, they had not learned their place. Or perhaps his current state had led them to grow bold in their confinement. He banished their voices with a twitch of his consciousness and turned his attentions to the speck at his feet.
Speak, my servant. Speak, my Mortark.
Arkan the Black, Mortark of Sacrament, stood on the icy surface of the shivering sea and gazed up at the colossal horror which loomed over him. Nagash, the monster he had served for a millennia, and likely would for many millennia more, had appeared suddenly, like a strike of black lightning, streaking down from weeping skies. The Undying King was impossibly vast, his towering form surrounded by a flickering corona, which changed hues, ever shifting from green to black to purple and back again, with painful rapidity. His shape had issued like smoke from the cracked ice, and it wavered in the cold wind which whipped across the sea. An army of moaning spirits, the courtiers of Stygix, swirled about Nagash, drawn helplessly into his hellish orbit. They blended together and broke apart in a woeful dance of agony. The wide skull, lit by its own internal flame, gazed down at Arkan.
My lord, you look well, Arkan said.
It was a lie. The Undying King's great skull was cleft from crown to jaw, and his armoured form was battered and twisted. Bones were broken, sections of armour missing, and a sickly radiance poured from 100 wounds.
Speak,
Nagash repeated. Ragged spirits squirmed from his maw as he spoke, joining those which swirled madly about him. Behind Arkan, the crouched shape of his dread abyssal, Razorak, stirred. The creature scented the soul stuff leaking from the gash and growled hungrily.
I crave a boon, O Undying King, Arkan said, gesturing for his steed to be still. There is an army coming, Nagash said.
The thunder of his voice made the ice beneath Arkan's feet crack and shift. Arkan nodded, pleased by his master's apparent lucidity. It was a rare enough thing these days.
There are always armies, my lord. Grist for the mill, as you used to say. Yes, they creep across my bones like maggots. I can feel them. I wish them gone, Arkan. I wish all of it gone.
Arkan paused, trying to pass the meaning to that statement.
The forces of chaos have no intention of leaving, I fear. They have come to stay, and your realm suffers for it. We must drive them from this place.
Nagash said nothing for long moments. Then he said,
Do you know what Nagash means, my servant? It means absence. Nothing.
null. I am nothing, and yet I am everything. I am the end of all things. And the long night which follows the setting of the last sun.
You have said, Master. Nagash spread his long arms as if to encompass the horizon.
What is chaos to me? It is nothing. As the fire is nothing to the cold which follows the snuffing of the final ember.
Arkan nodded sagely, as if he hadn't heard the same speech 100 times before. Or some variation of it, at least. Nagash often liked to pontificate on the theme of power, and his memory was not what it once had been. His speeches were rote and almost ritualistic. But that ember must be snuffed all the same, my master.
And so it shall be. Chaos will devour itself. It must. Chaos is fire, and fire is not eternal. Only the cold is eternal. Only the dark. Only Nagash.
The looming shadow lowered its arms. It wavered, pierced through by falling snow, and the bruise-coloured light of the setting sun.
And what of your servants, my lord? What of those who seek only to serve you?
My servants? What are servants but extensions of my will? Your thoughts are my thoughts. Your voice is my voice. You are but a shadow of a memory, given form and power by my will. Rejoice, Arkan, for the burden of your destiny is not your own.
This, too, was a variation on a very old theme, and Arkan bore it as stoically as ever. More than once over the centuries he had considered rebellion, and more than once he had discarded the idea as quickly as it had come. How does one rebel against a god? The answer, given all available evidence, was badly.
As you say, my master.
A part of me desires only silence, to snuff out the light and let the dark rush in and fill the void which was once Shaiish. Let the three-eyed king fight such an unravelling, if he would. I care not.
Arkan waited, but Nagash had fallen silent. He often did these days, no doubt lost in his own memories and the manifold perceptions of his fragmented consciousness. Finally, Arkan said,
And yet we are still here, Master. You have not snuffed out the light.